Oh, thank you, Philip. Just wanted to give an update on how exactly we got to this situation. In the last couple of years, the Mid-South entomologists had observed a reduced efficacy with control of thrips with seed-applied neonicotinoid insecticides. These primarily on commercial locations. We didn't see this as dramatically in some of our field trials at that time, but the reduced control that they were seeing was definitely more dramatic with thimethoxam. Now, initially, we didn't know exactly what was going on. We attributed these reduction in efficacy to several different factors. We had some adverse weather conditions, high thrips populations. We did have some issues with some seed treatment accuracy of retailer locations that we investigated at that time. And there was also the issue of with resistance in the pigweed resistance. There was increased use of pre-emergence herbicides. We didn't know if that was affecting what was going on. So in 2013, we established several research projects to try to figure out exactly what was going on. We investigated all of these different areas. So there were some suggestions or concerns that we had a formulation issue. We investigated that. Looked at our actual manufacturing process, the formulations. We didn't see any issues there. There was a question about microbial degradation that was affecting thimethoxam more than imidacloprid. And Dr. Scott Stewart did some preliminary work there. He did measure some microbial degradation, but it was very small, not enough to be able to address or to show the reduction of efficacy that we're seeing. We also had some trials evaluating how these pre-emergent insecticides or herbicides were impacting the seed treatments. There's also been other projects. I think there's other projects that are presented here at this meeting. I think there's been mixed results. Sometimes they've shown an impact. Other times have not. We just don't think that was really affecting it. So we worked our way back, basically down to an issue with the pest itself, with tobacco thrips, which is the predominant thrip in the Mid-South. And there was a question of whether we're having a shift in the population, and we did not find that to be the case either. So in 2013, a group of us, we were able to make some collections from the Mid-South where we were having the issues primarily. We were able to send those thrips to our research station down at Vero Beach, Florida. And we used a leaf dip bioassay method recommended by IRAC to determine the LC50s for those thrips colonies. We had colonies established from across the Mid-South, basically just one colony per state. We got to this at very late in the season. We're just fortunate to be able to get out there and grab a few colonies late in the season and get them tested. So these are the data from that first year of testing. We had gotten a laboratory colony from Dr. George Kennedy at NC State, and those are, you can see here. So we ran those, and when we compared those to the collections from the Mid-South, from Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee, you can see a pretty dramatic increase in the LC50s compared to what we saw with the laboratory reference colony. And on the far right was a collection we got from Texas. And you can see that even though the confidence limits overlap there somewhat, still a fairly dramatic rise in the LC50 compared to a field collected colony. So what we proposed to do this year was to do a more comprehensive survey. We collected 89 collections from across 10 states. We were able to actually bioassay 55 of those collections. As you can imagine, if you're out there making collections, we lost some collections in shipment. Sometimes there weren't enough tobacco thrips to actually conduct a bioassay. Sometimes it was a totally different species of thrips. But we were able to assay 55 of those collections. We collected them early We tried to get out there and get a jump before the season started, so we tried to collect off of weeds or wheat, something like that, early, and then we also collected during the crop season, in crop, whether it was off of cotton or peanuts. Now, the thresholds that we established, I think, were very conservative, but and we don't know how these thresholds actually translate into yield efficacy. These are strictly a comparison between the feeding assay, between the susceptible colony and these field collections. But we did continue to test that susceptible colony periodically throughout the summer to make sure the assay was still valid. And then after, if we had a very high level of survival from our bioassay, then we forwarded the collections to Dr. George Kennedy at NC State to do further testing. And he will be presenting data later on in the afternoon session. I believe it's at 4:45. So he'll be presenting a lot more detail of the data at that point. These were our collection locations. As you can see, we tried to make it as across the cotton growing area as much as we could. Of course, we did focus on the Mid-South where we did have issues. I'll go through four sets of data here. We had two different doses that we evaluated. The first low dose was 360 microliters of formulated cruiser per liter of diet. The high dose was 3,600, so we did a low dose, and we did 10 times that. So this is on the y-axis. This is the number of colonies or collections, and then on the x-axis you have the susceptible group, what we suspect as resistant, and then on the far right, we had very high levels of survival at a few locations that were greater than 50%, and we separated those out. So essentially, for the low dose of thiamethoxam, we had 21 of the collections that we considered susceptible. Those range from from the Mid-South to the Southeast and Texas. 24 collections we considered suspect for resistant. Most of those, 18 of those, were out of the Mid-South, but we did have some out of the Southeast as well. And if you look to the far right, there were four collections that had greater than 50% survival, and two of those were from the Mid-South and two of them were from the Southeast. When we look at the high dose of thiamethoxam, again, at the high dose, we found 25 of the collections were considered susceptible. Again, they were spread throughout the Mid-South, Southeast, and Texas, and 23 collections were considered suspect for resistance. And most of those were from the Mid-South, but we did have some from the Southeast. If you notice, we didn't have any that were greater than 50% survival. We'd use the same doses for imidacloprid, and so it'd be the 360 microliters of gaucho per liter of diet and the 3,600 for the high dose. Similar trends here. We saw 23 of the collections were considered susceptible. 22 of the collections were considered suspect for resistance. 14 of those in the Mid-South and 8 in the Southeast. And you notice there were no collections that had greater than 50% survival for the low dose of imidacloprid. For the high dose of imidacloprid, 25 of the collections were considered susceptible. 18 were considered suspect for resistance. Most of those were in the Mid-South, but we did have four of those in the Southeast as well. So again, Dr. Kennedy will be presenting some more detailed information about those collections later on this afternoon. So to summarize that, basically we found suspect tobacco thrips collections for both thiamethoxam and imidacloprid. Of course, the highest levels of survival we found were with thiamethoxam. We did find high levels of survival early season, so off of weeds, wheat, we found high levels of survival there, but it trended toward more higher levels of survival in crop, as you would expect. As they move into the crop, get more exposure, you know, the survival levels on the collections would go up. We did see a lot of variability among the survival in different locations. We saw variability within states. We saw variability among the states. But in general, the highest survivals, again, we found in the Mid-South, and most of the populations that we saw high survival on were in the Mid-South. So these, you know, patterns, state by state, and suggest that the differences aren't random, but that the differences in efficacy are real, that they're there. Now, in October, we had a meeting in Memphis, brought in a lot of the cotton entomologists, a lot of folks that are in this room today, and we brought them there for a discussion. We committed to show them the data as soon as we could. We did that, and had presentations on some of the work that they had done this summer. But we specifically wanted to talk about, you know, the value of neonics as a seed treatment in cotton, potential resistance management strategies, and potential best management practices that could help out with managing tobacco thrips in particular. So the conclusion, I think, of everyone that neonicotinoid seed treatments still provide a value to the grower. The value, of course, is changing with the resistance of a major pest here, but they are still providing some value, especially as Philip mentioned. I think that that protection right there at emergence is important. It's hard to get. You can't get that with a foliar, and that's important for the you know, uniform stand establishment. With the reduced efficacy that we've seen the last few years in our research trials, we're still seeing a fairly good efficacy out to 14, 21 days. But you know, of course, we used to see it a lot longer than that. It's not providing full season protection anymore, and in some of these areas with high levels of resistance, you know, you're at the lower end of that, of course. Again, most of this is that we're seeing is in the Mid-South, but in the Southeast, we have seen a few trials where it's the reduced efficacy is been observed there as well. The concern for the group was that, you know, without the use of neonicotinoid seed treatments, it would take a lot of foliar applications to provide effective control. And that if we switch totally to foliar applications, then we run into other issues like, you know, flaring spider mites or other pests, depending on what you were spraying. So, you know, those were issues, and especially thymethoxam is still beneficial in certain areas, especially Texas, where the western flower thrip is the predominant thrip in that part of the world, or if in certain other areas, sometimes western flower thrips can be the predominant in the population. That can be very beneficial there. And then, of course, all the other benefits that we get with neonicotinoid seed treatments that we're familiar with over the years as far as the handler safety and convenience and labor saving, those types of things. Now, when we talk about resistance management strategy, currently, the only thing that we have as an effective strategy are well-timed foliar insecticide applications with an alternate mode of action, and that do that in combined with a neonicotinoid seed treatment. If you're scouting, you want to trigger that. We want to be aggressive with this if we're going to save this or prolong the use of this this chemistry as a seed treatment in cotton. So when you're scouting, you want to apply as soon as you see the immature thrips. When you see immature thrips being produced there, that's when you want to make that application. If you're not, if you're just going to apply on a growth stage, the earlier the better. Probably the first true leaf is probably the most effective one. Other alternate resistance management strategies that we considered would be applying other seed treatments, insecticides that are labeled. For example, acephate is labeled. We've looked at that in combination with the neonics, And sometimes it seemed to add some benefit. Sometimes it really doesn't add that much. So it's been kind of a mixed bag, but that's one option. Infura products are another option. Of course, the group would like for industry to come up with a new family of chemistry, and that's not been the case. We've not been able to find anything new to this date. So there's nothing new on the immediate horizon anyway. As far as best management practices, some of the things we came up with as far as were to select a variety with high vigor. You want to manage that for the best, earliest growth that you can. Manage everything for optimum growth. And then I think they also mentioned that reduced tillage systems can help reduce tobacco thrips pressure. So in summary, the tobacco thrips resistance is there. It's a neonicotinoid issue. We've documented it for both products, thimethoxam and imidacloprid. Of course, the resistance levels we've shown so far are higher with thimethoxam compared to imidacloprid. But we think the continued use of the C treatments, whether neonicotinoids, if they're either a C treatment or Infura, without an IRM strategy, is not the best way to go. We need to have a resistance management strategy. So again, use the best management practices, and we want to employ a IRM strategy that reduces the potential for crop injury, but it doesn't intensify the neonicotinoid resistance situation. And we think that well-timed foliar applications are the best way to do this. And with that, I'll take any questions if we have any time.
Thank you, Scott.